This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 7th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Relations to Time Continuum. This lecture is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right. Let's sail at once, instantly, and immediately into the more complex aspects of Scientology. Preclears. The material, new six basic steps. I'll have to lecture you about the six basic steps later. Preclears are complicated. They are complicated because they are designed to be complicated. Now, one of the more interesting facts about life is that they are designed to be so complicated that they cannot unravel themselves. This is a great oddity. But they do have several mechanisms by which they hope to unravel themselves. And one of these mechanisms is death. And another one of these mechanisms is survival. Now, do you see survival as a mechanism by which one is seeking to unravel himself? By whatever computation, he is trying to ride through to the end of track. It's all going to get uncomplicated someday. But more understandably, he believes that he can simply stop the whole course of existence. In either case, what is he objecting to? He is objecting to time. Time being on a solid agreement in any universe becomes another determinism than his own. Old Dianetic axiom, single highest level of aberration is time. The fact is that a universe is best defined as any agreed upon time continuum. And if you want to know how to get out of a universe or get into another universe, you can, with the greatest of ease, simply shift time continua. And if you can shift this, all else shifts. If you were to drift a trifle ahead or drift a trifle back of present time, you might possibly depart from the time continuum. Now, that is one of the things which a Preclear is trying to do. He's trying to go ahead or back of the present time moment in an effort to escape present time, because present time is the exact time continuum of the universe. Well, this is the basic mechanism of regression and futurosity. You know, it's quite spectacular that former studies, earlier than Dianetics and Scientology, never addressed the problem of people stuck or obsessively going into the future. That's because it's one of the earliest areas deserted by the individual. But an individual can get stuck thousands of years into the future. All right. The criteria of a universe, then, is the co-hyphen motion of particles in space. When we say space, we, of course, are referring to a viewpoint of dimension and something that really isn't there, but something in which things move, and all of this becomes an incomprehensible lot of balderdash the moment we start to explain it mechanically. But if we can forbear to explain it with precise mechanics and energy masses and lumps and deterioration and the half radiation rate of carbon antimolecules or some other idiocy, see, why, we can look at it very calmly and recognize that there are a set of considerations known as time, and that all else is the tick-tock of a clock keeping time. And when I say all else is the tick-tock of the clock, I mean that. You probably had a couple of energy particles to tell you the time was going forward so that you wouldn't any longer have to change your consideration all the time about how late it was getting. So time went on automatic. How does time go on automatic? Time goes on automatic by the simple process of two or more energy particles co-acting. Then by you looking at the co-action of the energy particles, and we have time on automatic. It's just as simple as that. Providing you are not pushing around the energy particles. Now, of course, we could have two energy particles that you were pushing around, and time wouldn't be on the automatic, but you had already invented yourself a clock. So it was starting to go on automatic, and when they just simply move around in relationship to each other, why, believe me, you've got time on the run. Now, what we call a confusion with relationship to time is a number of energy particles which are moving in relation to each other and which themselves cannot be traced. A confusion on an energy pattern level brings about the same state of mind in the individual watching it as would be brought about by attempting to tell time by a clock which has been covered with soot, painted black, and had a hood dropped over it. And he'd keep trying to look at this clock to find out what time it was, and it wouldn't tell him what time it was, and so he would become a very, very upset indeed, you see? Particularly if he had to get someplace, you'd more or less have that postulate too. All right. Wherever we look in this universe, we find a confusion of energy particles. So the wonder is that any regularity of time is kept at all. Now, why should a regularity of time be kept? If you knew when, very tricky, if you knew when and where any particle originated before it began to do a tick-tock, you could, of course, say that's where and that's when, and poof, there would be no particle. In other words, you could do a perfect duplicate of a particle with ease, so long as you knew its origin. Now, let's again look at a confusion. And we see that a confusion is going round and round and up and down and back and forth, and it has rapidly become impossible, according to the individual, to trace back each one of the energy particles in that confusion as to the point of its origin. Therefore, he is stuck with mass or matter. He cannot, he believes, trace these things back to their point of origin. That's the supposition he takes in order to make a problem out of this. So he says, I've got it. Nobody can unmock it. We don't know what courses these particles have traveled. And just look at them go round and round and up and down and fly in masses to the right and to the left. And oh, no. And the faster and further they do this, the more, he says to himself, do you know I will never be able to locate where that particle was marked up? It is a matter of change. We see that a particle is changed and then persists. Why does it persist after it is changed? It persists after it's changed because nobody knows exactly where it was changed from. So when they look at it, it doesn't disappear. If you looked at a particle at the exact instant of its creation, in the space in which it was created, it would disappear. This is very baffling to many thetans. They do a mock-up, and then it doesn't persist. And they say, oh, that's too bad. I mean, it's very upsetting. Here I've done this nice mock-up, and it just doesn't last. Well, all they'd have to do is change it around. One of the things they could change would be its ownership, which would be the author of its creation. They could change its position in space. Or they could change the space in which it had been marked up without changing its position in relationship to self. A number of little trick things could be done with this mock-up to make it persist. But the problem is really to keep track of things after they've been marked up, after particles have been marked up, because only in that way, the thetan thinks, can he then unmock this time continuum. Well, when he becomes incapable of unmocking it, he, of course, becomes incapable of destroying it, and therefore he is the victim of the universe. The universe is no longer, at any time, his victim. So we've changed the roles here. Now that it's been agreed upon, and it's been mocked up, and a lot of interesting things moving it, and different rates of speed, and so forth, why, he loses track of the whole thing. Therefore, he says, one of his reactions is, "My God, what a solid wall." Well, he becomes obsessed after a while and decides that if he doesn't keep better track of all these particles, why, he will never be able then to unmock them, and so will never be able to escape this time continuum, and in such a way will not be able to bring a nothingness where the universe stood. And in his franticness, he says, "No, no, no, there must be no more motion of these particles. Now let's stop them all right here and look it over very carefully, and somehow or another we will find where they came from and the courses they have led, and we will track these back very carefully, and poof, they will disappear. But while we're doing this, we just must not have a continuous run on and on and on of these particles. We've got to stop it and then trace them back, holding them stopped the while." It won't work. Of course, if he stopped all extant particles, he would have no time in which to trace them back. Now, all of this is computational. It is the viewpoint of the preclear of the subject, time. This is the way he is looking at time. He sees this coaction of particles running like a clock and believes, therefore, that a time continuum is being foisted off on him against his will. And he objects to this because any solidity which he beholds is too solid for his digestion. Remember that a thetan is a static. He does not have mass, wavelength. He doesn't have space, nor does he really have time. He has no location in space unless he says so. Now, we take a particle which has mass, which could be part of or influenced by wavelength, which is a part of a huge clock called time. And we wonder that this thetan gets upset about it. The thetan, of course, cannot duplicate it. And it doesn't duplicate the thetan. And the thetan says, "Doggone it, particle, you've got to duplicate me." And the particle knows nothing. And the thetan knows everything. And one of the reasons a thetan goes into the postulate, "I don't know," is an effort to get himself on a parity with the particle, so the particle then will be able to know that it has duplicated him. That's very, very slippy logic. But nevertheless, he indulges in it. If I could just know little enough, I would then be able to be on a duplication level with this particle, because the particle knows nothing. So there's no duplication possible. And so the communication eventually becomes a postulate. Communication is impossible. Why is communication impossible? Because duplication of a particle is impossible. Unless a thetan says, "I don't know." Unless he says, "I am located in space," precisely. Unless he says all manner of weird and peculiar things conducive to making himself as near as possible a particle of energy. Very well. You see, then, the problems of duplication between a thetan and a particle could bring about the consideration on the part of the thetan that a duplication was impossible, and therefore communication was impossible. And there is the beginning of the end as far as he's concerned. He gets stuck with his postulate, communication's impossible. But please observe something. Communication is not impossible at any time. A thetan could always make one particle communicate with another particle. Always. You see that? So he could get something to duplicate the particle. Well, if he could get something to duplicate the particle, let me assure you of something. The particle would have a tendency to disappear, as we know in matched terminaling. More important than that, if he simply went out, all out, and said, I'm simply going to communicate to the center of the particle would disappear. Why? Communication is the closest approach to a consideration. And the particle was a consideration in the first place. And all of its motions and convolutions, no matter the conviction of the thetan observing them, are entirely and completely bound by the fact that it was first and last and always a consideration. And that it had space to be created in. And that it had positions to reassume. That it has followed a route or a pattern are alike considerations. And when we get to the final analysis of the thing, time is only a consideration. That one is within one time continuum is simply a consideration. That he is not in another time continuum is simply a consideration. If you were very good, you could say, I am not now in this time continuum. I am now in the time continuum of the Psi universe. Bing, bing, and you'd be in a different universe. And what would you do when you got into that universe? You would simply spot some spots and square yourself around, and you would be able to observe anything in that universe. And then if you wanted to leave that time continuum, you'd simply say, I'm no longer a part of this time continuum. I am a part of some other time continuum. See? Consideration, consideration, consideration. Now all you'd have to do is vaguely think about somebody in this universe to get the first shred of agreement on what he is observing as a time continuum. You just think about that person. And you're liable to get stuck in his time continuum. You certainly will be able to observe his time continuum. Now, I think this is very interesting because we find people all the time thinking of dead people who have what kind of a time continuum? It stopped, didn't it? Now, we want to know why death sticks people. Well, this is the high echelon reason why death sticks people. That's all there is to it. He merely switches into the time continuum of the dead person by thinking of the dead person. Why? Because he thinks that the dead person has agreed upon a certain set of time values, to wit, stop. And the trick of the whole thing was that the person who died is no longer in that body. He is elsewhere following along in the same time continuum. You see that? So we have all sorts of computational data, but when we think of this whole thing as switches from one time continuum to another, or the time continuum of one person to another person, we can understand a great deal about what people are doing. Number one, they are depending upon their environment to tell them at what speed they are running. Hence, we have somebody going down to the South Sea Isles, and he's always been an ambitious go-getter, up-and-at-'em puppy salesman. You know, he's just right in there pitching, and he goes down to the South Sea Isles, and he's down there for 3 or 4 months, and we go down, and we find him sitting under a coconut tree. He's agreed with the time continuum of the natives of that isle, and they don't move very fast. See how this is? So we find a native of that island goes to New York City, and things are moving very fast, not as fast as in London, but we won't try to be bewildering this morning. He goes to New York City, and the traffic is dashing up and down and back and forth, and the native looks at it, and he says, "Oh, no." And he does one of two things. He either goes mad or speeds up. Now, when you're looking at this, you're looking at the hole in the whole thing. You know what the hole is? The native looked at the particles. He didn't look for a person. Now, I'll go over that again very slowly, because this is very, very slippery. This is quite important. The native came to New York City and he watched all these particles going around. You see automobiles and things and people and so forth. And he looked at all these things and he looked at the particles and he said, "This is running awfully fast." And he became confused. Now, the odd part of it is the young salesman that goes to the South Pacific Island and is found under the coconut tree is generally nuts. He himself has gone a bit mad, too. At first he said, "Why don't things move, you know? There's a carabao plodding along the road, an old cart behind him, you know. Fast, dizzying, speeding traffic." Here's a girl. And she's busy washing out clothes beside a stream, and she's going splat, splat, splat. Everything he looked at, he said, "Speed it up, speed it up. Come on, let's go. Speed it up. Where's a tree?" What did he do wrong? He looked at the particles. He didn't find somebody with whom to agree. Now, in the first place, he has done an interesting thing. He has left, let us say, New York City without going out of agreement with New York City. He just left that all as an automaticity. The removal of the particle called his body from New York City to the South Pacific was an automaticity which took place by boat, train, and plane. And therefore, he never really went out of agreement with New York City. He's still living in the time continuum of New York City. Otherwise, he would never be bothered by the slower speed of the new environment. The next thing he did wrong was to start being critical without going into agreement with anybody in his new environment. What he should have done was find somebody and talk the whole thing over and find out if they did have any points of agreement. He would have found so. He found they probably agreed upon liquor and women, and whether it was good or bad, they still would have had some points of agreement. See? And he would have talked this all over, and I talked this all over with two or three other people, and about what they were doing and what it was all about, you know. That's all that's necessary. But he would have found points of agreement with this particular environment. And do you know that the time continuum in that environment would have seemed the most natural thing to him he ever beheld? He would have understood it perfectly. Follow me? He would have understood it perfectly. And the native who went to New York City, instead of looking at the whizzing taxi cabs, should have talked to a few cab drivers and found out if they had any points of agreement of any kind whatsoever. And they would have found they had points of agreement about liquor and women and all kinds of things. And after he'd had a few points of agreement, see, this is pure necromancy. You're watching, you'll wake up to this in a second.
after he had a few points of agreement with the New York cab drivers and short order cooks and a few other people and bartenders and so on, bar flies, babes. After he had the traffic would have seemed to him to have been moving at just the right speed. This tells you what's wrong with many a preclear. He's moved from area A to area B and not gone into agreement with anybody because he believes agreement is probably dangerous. Agreement is something that leads one into further agreement with a time continuum, and this is a violently horrible thing to have happen to anyone. Mustn't agree. As a matter of fact, he has something there as far as agreement is concerned. There's a little bug in the whole subject of agreement because agreement does not run as a process. There's something a little bit wrong. One of these days we'll straighten out. Something just a little bit wrong with agreement. It's not quite a synonym for reality. Not quite. But agreement run on a preclear will wind him up in a solidity, and if that is reality, that's fine. By the way, what wouldn't you mind agreeing with works out at long last to be non-therapeutic. This is quite remarkable, but it's non-therapeutic. What wouldn't you mind agreeing with? It's what wouldn't you mind being together with? You might ask the same question. If you were running the process, which you have been running, which is this process of what are you separate from, you would find something very strange if you reversed the process and said, now let's see, what wouldn't you mind being associated with, or what wouldn't you mind being identified with amongst those people? Any way you phrase this so as to get the individual to associate himself thoroughly and completely with everything, person, object that he saw, would then bring him into a nice, handsome jam. This is non-therapeutic. Now, you'd think that if we can run separateness and separateness is therapeutic, why, naturally, we should be able to run the reverse. Togetherness. You know, what wouldn't you mind being together with? But if we ran this for a long time, we would find the preclear getting into fouler and fouler condition. Now, there's a trick process known as what space wouldn't you mind occupying? Or what wouldn't you mind having occupy your same space? There's a different process. It simply demonstrates to a thetan eventually, unless he's a real dummy, that he can't possibly be worried about occupation of space. It's something that doesn't exist. Two things can occupy the same space. Korzybski's dead now, so we're permitted to say it. However, what'd be wrong with this, huh? Why would this produce such a reverse and upset phenomenon? Why would a preclear get upset about this? Why is it non-therapeutic? It's because you haven't disconnected him from his former time continua. Before, you connected him to the new time continuum. See that? We just supposed he would disconnect automatically. Now, I'll tell you a very cute process. See, we have put disconnect on automatic. We expect it to happen as a matter of course. We think we will automatically go out of agreement with things. We don't. And that is all that's wrong with this togetherness type of process as the opposite of separateness. You're getting a new agreement without disconnecting from the old agreement. I'll tell you a real cute process now. We have an individual here, and this individual we ask to hold on to the arm of his chair. And in holding on to the arm of his chair, We tell him now to make up his mind to let go and let go. S-O-P-8-C, part of. And, of course, he lets go. All right, let's do it in another way. Now hold on to the arm of the chair with your right hand, and now with your left hand, make your right hand let go. And that is the usual phenomenon. And I have seen people in an audience under group processing where I was running this experimentally take 5 or 10 minutes to pry that hand loose, actually working at it desperately, almost tearing up the chair. What's that teach us? That you can let go with a postulate, but you're going to have an awful time if you're letting go with messed. You got it? The fellow says to his right hand, let go, and it let go. But he says, they think this is done therapeutically. This is not therapeutic at all. Left hand is now going to pull the right hand off of the chair. See? The last postulate which the right hand has is hold on. And now we're going to apply force. You follow me? You can run this on a group, they'll practically kill themselves. You can practically die laughing because you know what's happening. It's not a therapeutic process at all. The process is simply the difference between force and a postulate. You change the postulate to consideration, you're all right. You use force to overcome it, and boy, are you all wrong. Got it? So actually, you should never really handle the body with lots of swing, you know, and this way and that way. If you want to, I mean, you know, force, motion, force, more force. If you want the body to swing, you should simply tell it to swing. And you'll get 3 times as much swing as you will when you're trying to put it in with force. You want the body to hold on? Say so. But for heaven's sakes, tell it to let go. Now, if you want somebody to move into a new area, tell them to move into the new area. But not until you've told them to leave the old one. There's many a mother brutalizes many a child by telling the child to do something without telling the child to stop doing something first. Hence we get this thing called confusion of orders. And a confusion of orders is simply this. To give an order, and then without giving the command which ends that executional line, to give another command. Before one cycle of action stops, start another one. See that? So before one process is abandoned, it should at least be stopped. Now, I'll let you in on a little secret here. It does not terribly matter if you don't flatten a process. The brain is full of so many vias, bogs, and valleys of death and all that sort of thing. Another one won't matter. But if you were to get somebody into a long comm lag and you told him to go into that comm lag by asking him some question that took him there, and then you change the process, you are trying to wrench him out before he has stopped the cycle of action. And without asking him to stop the cycle of action, you start another one. Now, actually, you get somebody in the middle of an hour and a half comm lag, and you simply say, well, that's all. We'll finish that process now. That's all over. That's it. All right, you can leave that process now. Now let's find something. And this guy did a little bit upset one way or the other. He'd struggle around, and no real damage would result. Your preclear's ARC would be chewed up. He'd be distracted, perhaps. But no real damage. Good result of this. But if we got him in the middle of an hour and a half comm lag, and without telling him anything more about that, we gave him another different auditing command. We have told him to take his left hand and pull his right hand off of the chair. He didn't finish the cycle of action. It wasn't run out. He was still holding on to something, and now you've given him something else to hold on to. And after you've given him 40 or 50 things in a row to hold on to without telling him to let go of any, you have an engram bank. You heap savvy this now? Hmm?
Yes.
It's not a very complicated thing. But it has an awful lot to do with time. Since we look at time as a central aberration, what are we looking at here? Hmm? We're looking at time, and we realize that time is a consideration. And that the consideration called time descends into a space-particle relationship, which then keeps track for us and furnishes in many other directions a game. But the motion of these particles is keeping careful time. And a confusion takes place in anybody who is dependent upon these particles and who sees them tracking too fast for his recall. They start going too fast or too many for easy tracing, and he knows he is losing the, he thinks, he is losing the ability to unmock the whole clock. And he thinks he is then losing his ability to destroy. The actuality is he doesn't have to destroy it because it doesn't exist except by consideration. All he has to do is break a few agreements, one way or the other, to leave any time continuum. That's all he has to do. When Grandpa dies, for heaven's sakes, find some disagreement points with Grandpa, and you won't be trying to go on his time continuum. Get the idea? When you leave New York City to go to the South Pacific, don't wind up in the South Pacific in a horrible, nervous state simply because everything is moving so slowly. Break a few agreements with New York City and then make a few with the South Pacific. And you'll find the clocks all work. All right, much more important than that, the pre-clear in changing auditors is to some degree changing time continuum. A time continuum is changed each time a pre-clear leaves an auditor. Why? Well, each auditor is running to some degree at a different rate. And all auditors have a point of agreement with which the pre-clear is still in agreement, and that's Scientology. See? All right. Pre-clear is still in agreement with Scientology, but doesn't break any agreements or disagreements with the auditor. Now, you will find him rather uniformly trying to do this strenuously. He's trying to say, we must break some agreements with that auditor we just had. Must do it. So the way he does this is to tell you, the new auditor, that he, the old auditor, was no good. See that? He said that auditor was no good, and he did this and that, and he broke this auditor's code and that auditor's code. Well, maybe the fellow did it, maybe he didn't. That is not what is happening. What is happening simply is that your pre-clear is trying to break a time continuum with the auditor he just had and then form a new continuum with you. And part of his berating is based upon the conception or misconception that you don't like other auditors either. Follow me? Every once in a while, somebody comes up to me and tries to get me to be very friendly on the basis of running down auditors in general, you know, and so forth. And they're just off on their wrong foot. They think that I don't know people or something, you know. And I know there are some auditors around who could be better, but I also know that the intentions of auditors in Scientology are so superior to those which have existed in any other time and place in this time continuum that there's hardly any comparison. I know this. It isn't something I just dream up. Their intentions are better. You could even say their intentions are terrible. You see, their intentions are terrible, and they'd still be better. Because the general broad intention of people who are trying to do things for other people and so forth is not ordinarily bad, but looking at a few of the professional spheres of the last few millennia, I tell you, that somebody comes along and says the intentions of auditors are bad or something like that, he's nuts. He is simply being obsessively critical. That's all. One, it's not true, and two, I wouldn't believe it anyway, see? But the main point we're making here is he conceives some sort of a difference here, you see, when he talks to an auditor and talks to me, and therefore he conceives this difference. There isn't any difference, but he conceives it. And he says, therefore, I must break agreement with all these auditors in order to talk to you, so none of these auditors are any good. Get the idea? He says, you, Ron, must live on another time continuum. Well, maybe I do. Maybe I live on dozens. But I'd find it much easier if he would simply get on with a conversation. You see, when they're doing this, they don't know what they're doing, so therefore it doesn't do them very much good. It's just dramatization. Got that?
Yeah.
Now, somebody's liable to come from Mars and tell you what a horrible place Mars is. You would be very surprised. Well, there are two choices you can take there. One, Mars is pretty horrible. Yeah, that's one choice. And the other choice is that he's simply trying to break agreement with Mars so that he can run on the time continuum of Earth. Well, now listen, when we're talking about Mars, or auditors, or New York City, or the South Pacific, aren't we talking more or less about considerations of different speeds in one time continuum called massed universe? This universe, see? Well, that's right. Now, we're just talking about different considerations that one could have with relationship to the physical universe, which is all around us, without at any time leaving the time continuum of the physical universe. Well, we see this odd thing that the physical universe, time is subdivisible into base time and subtimes. New York City and the South Pacific Isle both run exactly on the same time track. They even watch the same sun, the same moon, the rising of the same stars. So there's no difference in actual base time between these two places. But the consideration of subtime is different. Why? Each locale has a different set of self-determined particles. And that's what makes the time different between New York City and the South Pacific. There's self-determinism around. There are live forms. You got it? And these live forms can change their minds. And in view of the fact they can change their minds, they view the amount of action or motion differently, one to another, but they have amongst them in one community a sub-base time. Get the idea? Here's base time, which is time continuum of the whole universe, which by the way, mirrors itself in the radiation rates of various radioactive materials. And so on. This is it, you see. The galaxies move in relationship to galaxies at such and such a rate. Photons travel more or less at such and such a speed, given a standard medium through which to travel. And that's base time. But now we've got one planet and another planet and another planet. Now these three planets, each one of them, of course, has different considerations in its populations as to time, all of which are based on base time. But they have this because they are self-determined and they have ideas. Now, in each part of each one of these planets, we would have a new base time. But it's a sub-base time because it's based on the universal time, and then the base time of the planet, and then the base time of the community, all of which depend on the base time of the universe. See this? And all this comes about from just this one thing, just this one item, and no other item. Considerations are present as to how fast or how slow things should be. Now, we find that animals spin and gyrate and behave peculiarly in storms. And if you watch an animal during a storm, you will see that he's moving faster. He is approximating the wind or the rain or the clouds. A group of wild horses on the plains can be perfectly happy grazing along, and a storm starts to whip up in a wind, and you see these horses rearing and throwing their heads and manes and racing around in circles. It's almost as if they had a storm dance. And this, of course, is their idea of staying in duplication with the baseline particles. See, they think they've got to stay in the same speed with the base particles. Follow me? All right. Human beings have more considerations than animals, and so they are not as obsessive about what they do with relationship to a storm. There is nothing right or wrong about moving faster when the particles around you are moving faster. But you will find that human beings vary the speed with relationship to the storm more easily than does a horse. See? He does or does not move faster. Storm comes along, he may just sit down right there and wait till it blows over. But that's because he has a consideration of, and the amount of consideration available in an individual is proportional to the obedience or dependence on the clock called base time. The more consideration one is capable of performing, the less dependence he has on the base clock. And as one advances one's ability to consider, one rather rapidly moves up to a point where an individual can change his mind about which base he is following. See? He can change his mind more easily. So the more capable he is, the freer he is, and the more he makes his own time. It should tell you a very, very great deal about preclers. An enormous amount about preclers. You can see how bad off a preclear is by observing his observance of base time. And if he thinks he is very precisely timed in all directions, and that his motions and actions must all be timed with great precision, and if that time is based on the base time of the universe, we've got a boy who is ready for the shoot, strictly. Now, a preclear could be doing this odd thing. He could have his timing very regular without much dependence on base time. That'd be a different thing, see? He times his own actions and motions rather than actions and motions timing him. And he does rack up a set of highly regular motions. But if he does this, he rather has a tendency to create a universe around him. And if he doesn't do this, he doesn't. You want to control your environment to any degree, for heaven's sakes, run on your own base time, not on somebody else's. You see that? And then they'd have to agree with you. Slimy trick. But you would wind up by creating a universe. So that you find the heads of businesses and commerce and so forth, ordinarily, if they're quite successful, are liable to be running on a time which may be quite rigorous and repetitive, but which is not necessarily anybody else's time at all. And you find the people in that business then having to agree with this person about the base of the time he's running, and therefore they have to move at a different rate of speed, and so we have a time continuum within the time continuum within the time continuum, but we have, quite ordinarily, a very successful business. It doesn't matter how outrageous his assumed time base was. He would still create a universe with it, because that is the basic definition of what a universe is. Let's say somebody wanted to mock up some enormous factory someplace or another. Well, if he came to work every morning and punched the foreman's time clock, he's going to wind up building this factory or owning it, or... Ah, he'll get up to the third assistant tool fitter. The greatest of ease. His pay might even come up to a point where he can buy an extra piece of toast for Sunday. But as long as he is fitted entirely and completely and encompassed by every base time or sub-base time in the environment, without once, even in his own life or anybody else's life, adding anything by way of consideration to this, he might as well be dead. He's an animal. He never makes up his mind what he's going to do with his time. He never spots what he is doing with his time. He has no choice of any kind about any assignment of any action anywhere. He's an animal. See this? And you'd watch this fellow, and when the storm started to blow, he would start to do a storm war dance. And when the weather was calm, he would feel calm. Idiotically simple as this. I'm not inviting you to get outrageous time patterns. Not even vaguely. But I am inviting you to look at this mechanism with the preclear and find that he was in the army, which moves at a certain time speed, and he was in the army for years. And now he doesn't seem to be any good at all in civil life. You want to know what's wrong with him? This is a crude example. You want to know what's wrong with this boy? It's a very, very simple thing is wrong with him. And I've just told you what it is. You must get him, somehow or other, to disagree with the Army time base. And get him to agree with the civil time base, and his difficulties will iron out. In other words, don't let that automatic let go stand there. We expected that when he left the army, he would leave the army. He didn't. All he got was his discharge. He didn't get a disagreement with time. So when we send children to school, on and on and on and on and on, we put them on a certain time base. And you've seen these poor devils around that are 99 years of age, and they're still studying, going to class one way or the other. They're still more or less in school. Well, have you ever seen anybody who's been out of school for years who was still in school? You ever notice this? Did you ever see any successful young official of the Foreign Office and so forth that had yet never left public school? He just never was out of it yet. And look at his desk, and we see the public school, and we look at his walls of his room and home, and we see the public school, and this is all we see. Well, now, this is all right. It's one way to weld people together, but if we are expecting this man to be capable of independent decision, we'd certainly better get him out of school. Because the time-based call school says no independent decision of any kind, thank you. Right? So there are chaps around all over the place who are still in school. See? They're still in school. All right, let's get them out of school. Well, how do we get them out of school? The most fantastic thing. We just get them to find somebody in school they could disagree with and improve the consideration and find somebody in civil life they could agree with and improve the consideration. We would put them on a new time base immediately. Of course, we don't have to perform the second step at all. All we had to do is find somebody they could disagree with. That sounds like sort of a nasty process, doesn't it? And yet, it's the beginning of the process of separateness. It's the lower gradient of separateness. And as you run separateness processing, you're running this other process. You're saying, what one of these people on the platform could you disagree with? You're saying, who's separate from you out there? Follow me? All of a sudden, the individual starts being able to change his mind about people. Why can he change his mind about people? Because he's now running on another time base in relationship to people. He starts to run on his own time base. That's what it's all about. Follow me? It's a very funny process that sounds like it ought to be a workable process that isn't. This, again, is something you have to handle with kid gloves. But this sounds like a workable process. It sounds like a process that would just snap, 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 and there'd be nothing to it. And you'd say, boy, well, we got a pre-clear in good shape now if we just run this process. What wouldn't you mind going out of ARC with? Well, it sounds like a terrifically valuable, workable process. I mean, there's nothing to it. Except that your pre-clear, the largest percentage of the time, runs it right up to almost insane rage. He comes up the line a short distance and he will start into rage. And this happens often enough to be fairly predictable. But sooner or later, if we say to a pre-clear, what wouldn't you mind going out of ARC with enough times, he will go into uncontrolled rage. Fascinating, isn't it? Well, what's an engram? An engram is an effort not to go out of ARC with the past environment. We take the picture in the present so that we won't go out of ARC with it in the future. And that's what an engram is. Because, well, so that we won't go out of agreement with it. Because if we did, we'd get mad. And an engram, then, is a mechanism which keeps one from getting mad. This is a fact. There is actually another process you have to run that process. It's consequences, and the invention of consequences processing came about because of this phenomenon of rage when we ran what wouldn't you mind going out of ARC with? And that process was what would happen if you got angry? What would happen if you didn't get angry? And that's consequences processing. And you would have to run what would happen if you got angry and what would happen if you didn't get angry. You'll have to run that flat before you can run what wouldn't you mind going out of ARC with. So it looks to me, before you went very deep into the bank on a subjective process, you would have to handle anger one way or the other, or it'd have to have pitched the pre-clear upscale by some mechanism so that he would not experience this rage, because you would find him very difficult to handle. And the process, which works in this particular regard, wouldn't appear to at all. But what don't you know about that person? That just seems to be as non-sequitur as you could get. But nevertheless, this process, run, obviates that running, what would happen if you got angry? See, we don't know what the person's going to do, so therefore we get into an indecision about his affinity, reality, and communication. And therefore consider him dangerous. And therefore we had better protect ourselves before we disconnect anything with relationship to this person or connect anything with relationship to this person. Before we can change or alter, now remember the process is what wouldn't you mind going out of ARC with. Remember, the only thing you're ever going to really go into ARC with is a live being. This is the only place ARC is totally possible. So you've got to remedy live beings' emotions about totally before you can get anybody to disconnect from a time continuum. And that's why universes are traps. Thank you.